Welcome back to Earwax. I am Hillary, and as always, I am joined by Cody.
As always.
And I thank you for that. Dependable. Trustworthy.
Rock solid.
Yeah, rock solid, Cody.
Rock solid.
Yes. Speaking of rock, kind of, we're going to talk about music today.
Wow.
A music album by the name of Jamie.
By Brittany Howard. Do you remember the hype around this album?
Yeah.
It was substantial. And were you a big Alabama Shakes fan beforehand?
I was a very medium Alabama Shakes fan before this album.
An appropriate level of fandom.
It was like, I knew their big songs. I appreciated them for them. I had done a cursory listen of both of their big albums. So I knew them vaguely, but I wasn't like super invested, but I thought they were good.
Yeah. I was a casual fan. Mm. I like keeping things casual to my fandom.
Very nice. Yeah,
I don't go full on.
Part of your dependable brand.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. But I remember there being like a lot of hype around this record because it had been a minute since they had released an album. And then when this record came out, it just felt like it was everywhere.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
It was a long awaited, you know, Brittany Howard is, while there were a lot of discussions about how heavily involved she was in Alabama Shakes, you know, a lot of them not rightfully made.
Yeah.
She has written all of the music on this album, except for a couple, which I think she co-wrote. She produced everything, but she's used to producing most of her music. Mm-hmm. You know, I think she did a lot of the production for Alabama Shakes albums. It was long awaited because she had been the powerhouse behind this big band. And now she was coming out and she was like, this is what I'm all about. You guys are going to be able to see what I am and have been capable of this whole time.
Yeah. And we touched on like the lyrics and like who kind of wrote the lyrics and stuff like this. This is undeniably her because the record is about her.
Yeah, that's something that we were talking about a little bit before. I think it's really interesting. We've covered a lot of albums that have, you know, concept albums or that have like a perspective from several different characters' point of view or that have like a theme or consistent narrative throughout. And this one's a little more loose, but if you were going to come up with one theme for it, it would just have to be Brittany Howard's introduction to the world as a solo artist. Yeah. She's just going like, here's everything about my perspective and my personal history and my sense of morals and all the things that I feel like I really want to get out, whether they are personal to me or just things I believe in general.
Yeah. And I think what it's a interesting line to toe because this album wears its influences on its sleeve, right? Like you can hear Prince, you can hear like it's very soul influenced, funk influenced,
lots of singer songwriter influence.
But when you come out the other side, you understand that this is her artistic statement. Mm-hmm. This record has her personality all over it.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring in. It's not just all of her personal statements through the lyrics. You can hear her personal taste in music through the instrumentation
and the people that she chooses to collaborate with. Yes. Right, because like I think one of the folks from Alabama Shakes is on this record. The engineer that is on this record is a very deliberate choice. Like everybody who she worked with to make this record sound the way that it does is a reflection of like her choices.
Yeah, her personal state.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And to have your first solo record be so complete is a real achievement. Like this album is incredible. Like musically, artistically, it's endlessly listenable and it says something. It still feels fresh.
So passionate.
It's 7 years old, but like it still feels fresh. Mm-hmm. But yeah, exactly. There's so much passion and personality behind this record that, in my opinion, it will age very gracefully.
Yeah, and I think it works that way because something that she's said throughout the recording process, something that she thinks made this album a success, as well as her work with other bands, is that she has found this balance of just figuring out who she is and trying to stay as true to that as she possibly can, no matter things that she likes or dislikes about herself. herself are now just facts about herself that she wants to embrace and appreciate.
And she can approach her solo career with a lot of focus and not a narrow scope, but a more specific scope, because she has a bunch of side projects yes. in tandem with Alabama Shakes. She's mm-hmm. got her solo stuff. She got Alabama Shakes. She has Thunder Bitch. She has mm-hmm. Bermuda Triangle. She's just everywhere.
She has a new project. I think she debuted last year too. It's called, what is it? It's Kumite, and it's a hardcore band. Oh, and it awesome. Sounds fucking sick. Great project for her. I love that she's always experimenting with different genres. The raspiness of her voice lends to that style of vocals perfectly. It's a great match.
A bit of a departure from Jamie.
Yes. Okay. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about this too. Spencer and I actually saw her supporting this album back in 2021. We saw her at Outside Lands in San Francisco, and she played a lot of her original material from this album, all the best songs from yeah. this album she played. But she also played some really incredible covers, which she's well known for. Some of the covers she played during that set are You Are What I'm All About by The New Birth, Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher and Higher by Jackie Wilson.
Yeah,
fits
great.
Perfectly
Come on.
Into her vocal repertoire. She did two Funkadelic covers.
Nice.
One was You and Your Folks, Me and My Folks. And then she had these completely show-stopping bookends to her set list. The opener for the set was probably my favorite. She covered Funkadelic's Hit It and Quit It.
Oh, yeah.
Which was such a good way to rev up the crowd. Everybody was so excited instantly. And then she closed the set with a cover of Nina Simone and Weldon Irvine's Revolution.
Yeah.
It's like a masterclass in like getting everybody feeling so excited and like disgusting in the best way. And then ending it with everybody feeling so inspired and like, wow, that was kind of a really life-changing set.
There's a real art to crafting the rhythm of a show. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. She's just great at choosing songs that fit really well into her vocal range, but also highlight all the best and most interesting parts of her voice,
which is on full display here.
Mm-hmm.
You ready to get into it?
Let's talk Jamie.
Let's talk Jamie.
Okay, we're talking about Jamie. We're talking about Britney. Because Jamie is an album by Britney Howard.
Yeah.
And it was released September 20th, 2019, a pretty significant time for the world, just before,
We're right on the cusp of a world-shattering event.
Yes. But when we were still young and sweet and naive. We got this album and we were better for it.
Yeah, we were better for it. And we're better for it to have gone through the pandemic with it.
Honestly, I was thinking this is just about a perfect record to release pre-pandemic.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that you saw her in 2021, mm-hmm. which means that she would have been touring, like you said, that record, because she probably couldn't have toured at all
in
2020.
She could not have. Yeah.
Man. Yeah. So weird.
I know. I think maybe she got a couple shows in before.
Yeah.
But
so you're like touring a record that's almost 2 years old at that point. Mm-hmm. That's a weird situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, even older than that. I'll get to it.
Okay.
But yeah, very interesting.
Exciting.
Yes.
Well, let's start with her early life. As a kid, she taught herself to play guitar, bass, and drums, as well as filling notebooks with lyrics.
Aww,
notebooks, plural.
Wow.
Yeah, very cool. Mm. Cooler than me. I just blogged.
You could turn those into a song and then you're the same.
No. God forbid. I hope nobody finds that old blog of mine.
Oh, wow. You released it into the world and we will look.
Oh, my God. She linked up with Zach Cockrell, Heath Falk, and Steve Johnson during high school. They jammed and played shows as well as made demos. But she also had other jobs. Mm-hmm. Tell me other jobs.
Oh, yeah. I have this quote from her when she said, I used to work for the post office. I used to work for Cracker Barrel. I used to work for Shoney's. I've had so many jobs. And in the back of my mind, I was like, I will always do music and I will always love music. But this might be the best I get for now. But I've still got that dream.
Yeah.
You know, I read this thing that said when she was 11, she saw a band play for the first time. And from that very moment on, she felt like she was hungry for it. She was dead set on being in a band specifically.
I saw I think there was a follow up question to that interview where the person was like, did you have any of the ones that you didn't like? She was like, Cracker Barrel.
Oh, I saw that. I think it was a separate interview from it. Separate interview that I got this quote from, but I did see that she was like, Cracker Barrel was the worst job. And she was like, and I've worked some shit jobs.
They were all on coke.
Yeah. She said that she had a job where she was picking up garbage on the side of the road. She was basically like a janitor for the outside, and she would have to like pick up dead animals and stuff. And she was like, that was better than Cracker Barrel because everyone was on coke. And she was like, by the way, if you guys are reading this, fuck you.
Yeah,
guys.
She did. Have you ever eaten at Cracker Barrel?
I don't think I've ever been to one. No.
So in eighth grade, I got to tour the East Coast. Mm-hmm. No big deal. And I was selected.
Let's bring that up a lot more on this show.
I was selected to tour the East Coast. Yeah.
Oh my God, elite.
I had to write an essay. Essay was like, why I deserve to tour the East Coast. And I was selected.
I love the idea of an eighth grader starting their essay with, I deserve to tour the East Coast.
Hey, it was a staff pick. Okay. Right? So wow. I was one of 10 in our school.
Oh.
Eighth graders. Anyways.
Nice. Seventh grade didn't stand a chance.
Nope. So we took a Greyhound bus from Joplin, Missouri to the East Coast, like D.C., and we stopped at every Cracker Barrel.
You're like, I've been to a Cracker Barrel.
I've been to the Cracker Barrel. Everyone from Joplin, Missouri to Washington, D.C.
Whoa.
I've eaten everything on that menu.
Wow.
And it is fine. It's fine. Dang. It's like Applebee's, but for old time school, like old school food.
Very off topic. I have a somewhat similar story where in middle school, I also won a competition. And in my elite group of students, we were taken in a Hummer limo to In-N-Out. Like 10 minutes away. And that was the outing.
Can I say that I really enjoyed my time on the East Coast? But a Hummer limo to In-N-Out is like, wow. And then I would like to pan to me staring at the Vietnam Wall.
It's the same. Instead, it's like 10 children in a party limo, like blasting music and staring at all the neon lights. No. You couldn't get us to shut up.
No, it was like, it's like 7:30 on like Memorial Day or like Veterans Day. And we're at the Vietnam Wall and we're just like...
That was a quiet night at Cracker Barrel. Yeah.
The chicken fried steak was pretty good, though.
Yeah, coloring in the menu just isn't the same.
No, but they have... We're going on a Cracker Barrel tangent. They have the...
mostly a Cracker Barrel episode.
They have the game that's like the triangle with the pegs, and you have to skip peg.
Yeah, yeah.
I always lost. Always. I could get
so
to like...
So it was
like
double
three.
Sad trip.
It was. Yeah, I played that game a lot at every Cracker Barrel. And I could get to maybe three, sometimes two, but I could never get one.
Oh, wow.
And then it's like if you leave three, it says like idiot or like ignoramus or something. And so it really didn't do a lot for my self-esteem.
Yeah, please edit this out. But it's kind of like your own personal Vietnam War. And I would like to edit it out, please.
It's fine. So they actually broke big after a Sirius XM host, Justin Gage, posted an MP3 of their song You Ain't Alone on his music blog. Man, that's a whole lot of early 2000s language. Mm-hmm. MP3 music blog.
Yeah.
They received a bunch of offers from labels and management. And right around this time, they changed their name, or they added the word Alabama to their name because they were just the Shakes. And they had a bunch of people tell them, like, there's a million bands named the Shakes, and they're like, so we'll be the Alabama Shakes.
Nice.
It's like they like threw a dart at the yeah. A in dictionary. Yeah. And like Alabama.
Well, I mean, they're from there.
Well,
right?
that probably yeah. is too.
I think that probably had a lot more to do with the decision than you're giving it credit
I
for.
I like the idea that they just chose it at random and it happened to coincide okay. with the state that they were from.
Okay, cool.
But they blew up fat. Do you remember them really coming on the scene? It just seemed like
I remember them just being there.
That's
already.
What I'm saying. Yeah. Is like they were just everywhere all mm-hmm. of a sudden. It was like 2012 when that first record, Boys and Girls, came mm-hmm. out. And suddenly they were, I was like, who is this? They're on national television every night.
Time's always trying to kill me.
Did you just say this? It was like they made that album themselves and then a label signed them after they already made it. Yeah, I think that they weren't signed when they made the album and then they got so popular online that the label reached out and they were like, let us release this album for you.
Let us do stuff for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really were just everywhere mm-hmm. very suddenly. And their follow-up record, Sound and Color, took a while, like 3 years, precisely because they were everywhere. They had a relentless touring schedule and that made it difficult to write new songs. Mm-hmm. But when Sound and Color came out in 2015, it debuted at number one. They were just crushing it. Yeah. They won a Grammy in like 2018
that
as well.
That title song was everywhere.
Oh yeah, it was they were big. Yeah. And like just a meteoric rise to fame and well-deserved. I mean, yeah. She's unreal.
Mm-hmm.
So then they have like a year of trying stuff out, trying to figure out what the third record would be. But it's not working. And you have some stuff about that.
Yeah, they talked about as a band, writing music had always come very naturally to them. They never had to work through periods of fighting to come up with concepts for songs or records. They just like meshed very easily and wrote music easily. But they were coming to this period where it wasn't flowing as easily and they didn't know why. So her decision to temporarily break away from Alabama Shakes and focus on her own music wasn't one she took lightly, but it was born from a bunch of different intermingling factors, right? She'd been working so hard for so many years and felt that there wasn't really any space for her to discover what she wanted personally. So she's really curious about what her own work might sound like. Some of the other band members were getting settled in their lives outside the band, making coordination more difficult. And all of that's not even including the levels of exhaustion they were all experiencing because they'd all been working and touring for so long. I have this quote from her where she says, "It was always about new music, you know, performances, tour. It was just getting a bit tiring. And then when it came time for us to write songs together, the creativity wasn't there anymore. And that was really troubling because, of course, the first things are why? What am I doing wrong? But then I think it was just that everyone was getting really comfortable with their life. And, you know, the guys have families and they want to be fathers, which I completely respect. And then in turn, we had the conversation about, I don't think I can do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And they understood. I can understand them and it was bittersweet, but they also understood me too. And we ended things really graciously and benevolently and with kindness and respect. And I mean, we're family. So some of them are still on the record. So it's all good.
Yeah. It's a tough I imagine it's a tough conversation to mm-hmm. have when you've had the most successful 6-year run of your careers and mm-hmm. your lives and you're at the height of fame and fortune. You're taking in Grammys. You've got you have a record that's debuted at number one. It takes a lot of courage to walk away from that
mm-hmm.
and courage to walk away from it, but also to sit down with your bandmates and say, I need to walk away from this.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes I heard where she was talking about like why, like her feelings in between Alabama Shakes and debuting her solo album is when she said, oh my God, this is my first solo record. I don't want to blow this. I don't want to bomb this. I'm walking away from something that already works.
Yeah.
Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know why you're doing it. You're doing it because that's what you really want mm-hmm. right now. But what a scary decision to make to be like, what if people don't like what I have to say by myself?
Well, and it also speaks to exactly what you said, like that the overriding sense of needing to get your own creativity and your own voice at the helm, not from an ego standpoint, but from a statement standpoint of like, this is what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling is so deeply personal that it doesn't belong here with this group that is working, right? It belongs in its own thing.
If I'm an artist and I feel like my purpose is truly to make work that speaks to me, what is more personal and more artistic than speaking the most, like my deepest, most innermost personal feelings? And maybe I don't want to share those with people when it's meant to be my lived experience.
Well, and also, you know, you're shouldering people with the responsibility of the content of the record. Yeah. You know, and if the content of the record or like the stories that you're telling feel so deeply personal.
Are we saying this or am I saying
exactly
this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's to be able to step away from that and say, like, I'm going to make this statement on my own. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it feels right.
Yeah.
It feels right. And it does take a lot of it takes a lot of gall to do that. Gall in a good way. Like, you're stepping away from a band that is crushing it. Good for them that they were able to do it amicably.
She said this thing that sort of backs up what we're talking about. She said, I think I wanted to truly be myself. And, you know, I'm really influenced by people who are just so totally wanting to share their vision. And they start from the ground up. And that's what I wanted to do when I made this record. I wanted to start with the rhythm section. I wanted to make my own bass line and drum parts and keyboard parts and then put my own voice to it. Because to me, music and what I'm trying to say is very connected to one another. It's not two separate things. And I wanted to create something like that, even if it's once in my life.
It just speaks to how personal it is to her. Like, it's so personal. And that translates to the album.
Yeah. And you also, an audience can relate to feeling like, hey, I'm going to take this risk knowing that it means everything in the world to me. And if I only have this one opportunity to do it, I can't let it pass me by.
Exactly. I want to talk about the time period of when this album was released, because I think it kind of gives a little bit more gravity and also puts things into perspective. This record is not even 7 years old.
Yeah. It's so crazy because it feels like it's even newer than that to
me. It is. Well, see, to me, it feels older. Funny. Like, it feels so much. It feels like it's 10, 12, almost 15 years old. It will turn 7 later this year. That's partially why it's still relevant, but I think that like our collection of time or our collective perception of time is so warped by COVID and the general collapse of the United States into whatever it is
what
we're doing today.
About?
That it, to me, it feels like eons since this album was released. But like at that time, we're right in the throes of the Me Too movement, right? There's rising coverage of systemic police misconduct. There's an institutional lack of response and, in fact, pushback to all of that. Marginalized people speaking up and speaking out and the backlash from all of that. And this album puts a thumb on all of those cultural pressure points and it pushes.
I'm one drop of 3/5, right?
That's why that's partially why it still feels fresh today, is because all of that is
still relevant,
still here and has been ratcheted up, right? Like, that's what this album addressed in 2019 is only more present today. And it is social, like it's a social commentary, but it's deeply personal, as we've talked about. And that starts with the title of the record, which you have.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So she actually considered calling this album Black Bjork at one point.
I saw that.
Which is kind of badass.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that album.
But
title.
Yes. But she ultimately decided to go with something more personal. Something I thought that was interesting about the Black Bjork title, though, is one of the things that she made very clear about that distinction is she felt like there was a shared understanding between her and Bjork of like, I'm a woman and I've had to fight for every single bit of credit that I'm due. Like, every single thing I do, somebody tries to attribute it to another man that's working around me. And I see that in her work and I want to symbolize it.
Can we get that collaboration record?
Yeah, so cool. that would be cool. Okay, but yeah, she went with something more personal. The title is Jamie. Her older sister, Jamie, was 13 when she passed away from a very rare form of cancer called retinoblastoma. Brittany was 8 at the time. And this was a super unique circumstance because only about 1 in 15,000 children around the world are diagnosed with retinoblastoma. Wow. And of all types of childhood cancer, it's one of the highest, it has one of the highest rates of being cured with a 95 to 98% percent chance of success.
Good.
In fact, Brittany herself had been diagnosed with retinoblastoma at birth, but she survived with partial blindness in her left eye.
Man, that is...
And her, she didn't even know that she had retinoblastoma until her parents told her when she was like 13 or 14. Oof. So... In the short time that they had together, though, Jamie taught Brittany so many of the things that she holds dear and personal to herself still as an adult. She inspired her sense of creativity. She taught her to play the piano. They would make music together. Brittany said that she grew up very poor, so she and her sister would have to find different ways to make entertainment for themselves. And that sort of inspiration served as like a mantra for the rest of her life and for her sense of creativity around making music.
It's such a sensitive album cover. It's such a sensitive album title. And I think that she has a quote where she said that, you know, the title is her, dedicated to her, but the album is about me.
Yes.
And part of that, I have this quote where she talks about, like, I turned 30 and I was like, what do I want to do? What do I want the rest of my life to look like? Do I want to play the same songs until I'm 50 and then retire? Or do I want to do something that's scarier for me? Do I want people to understand me and know me? Do I want them to tell my story? I'm very private, but my favorite work is when people are being honest and really doing themselves. And this is a common refrain that I have seen with musicians and artists. They hit 29 or 30. I think Roger Waters wrote Time whenever he was 29. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what? Like, what is, like, what's happening? So I wanted to ask, did you also have a mini existential crisis when you hit 30? Because I did not.
I don't think it was around a number. I think I'm having a little mini existential crisis every goddamn day of my life.
That's the key, is I'm always in an existential crisis.
30 was just another day just in that life.
Yeah, like I look back on my 20s and see folks in their 20s now and think like, oh, how quaint of a time that was. But like, I didn't turn 30 and be like, well, it's time to really take stock of things. I gotta draw up a will. I gotta get it all figured out. Like, I just don't but there's a number of musicians that I've heard say a very similar sentiment where it's like, man, I'm 29. What is life?
Well, that's a really interesting perspective because I do think there is an important conversation to be had around age in the entertainment industry.
Well, that's true.
It means something different when you're in an industry that favors those who are younger and starts to discredit or overlook people as they get older.
Yeah.
Like, you feel a sense of pressure around, like, are they even going to still listen to me when I have my piece to say?
Yeah.
You know, like, and that is really unfortunate. It's something outside of her control, but she's obviously doing the best that she can with
it. You know what? That's a great point. It does take a lot of, it takes a lot of early success to earn your staying power. Mm-hmm. So even all the success that Alabama Shakes had, was it enough to be at 29? Like, do I have enough cultural staying power to do this? Mm-hmm. And like, consider it enough. Yeah. All right. Agreed. Fair point.
She also has like a lot of things going against her for like, unfortunately, fairly conservative country at this point. Like, she is a mixed race person. She's queer. She is a woman who is like very outspoken. It's like, these are all things I'm sure that she's like, and I have to push past all that and have people listen to me anyway.
Yeah, I saw some interview with her where she was like, you know how many people basically told me that you shouldn't be in a rock band? Like, we don't do front women guitar players. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not something that happens. So sorry about you. Move on. And on its face, it's just so ignorant. But listen to her.
Yeah.
for God's sakes, like, listen to her play, listen mm-hmm. to her sing. Why would you not want to put someone like that front and
doesn't
center?
Doesn't matter if she's 20 or 70. Yeah, like, who it's gives like, a that's shit? Her voice.
Like, yeah. like, what her identity, like, mm-hmm. good God, like, just listen to what she's saying and what mm-hmm. she's singing and what she's playing. Foolish. So a lot of these songs were initially assembled on her laptop. Some were years old and some were really recent, but they were just kind of sitting there waiting to be molded. And you and I have two separate stories about air conditioners.
Yeah, because they played a very significant part in this record. Seemingly, you won't hear any because she had to turn them off to record.
Yes.
But they were always ever present in the writing process. That being because while she had a lot of the bones and structure around things that she could create, when she first got into like sitting down, writing this album, how do I tell the entire world who I am in a half an hour of music? You know, like that's a lot of pressure. And she had already come off of having writer's block from working with Alabama Shakes. That didn't just change because she was working on her own solo material. So she was drawing a blank. She wasn't sure what she was doing. She was nervous. It was a big leap. She said, in the beginning, when I had decided, okay, I'm going to do it, I'm going to make this record, I put a lot of pressure on myself for it. It needs to be this or it needs to be that. And then when I did that, I really didn't leave a lot of room for creativity to come in. So I had the worst case of writer's block. Yeah. She couldn't figure out the songs. So she went to a psychic and she started talking to her about the confusion she was feeling. You didn't hear this part of the story?
I have no idea what this is.
Surprise, surprise. Well, she went to a psychic, Cody.
Okay.
And Brittany Howard said the best piece of advice she's ever gotten was when this psychic told her to stop trying and just be. Just be herself and let the music come to her. So Brittany Howard rented this gorgeous house in Topanga that had a big greenhouse as like the main bedroom. And it was filled with all these exotic birds and plants and butterflies everywhere. There was like different exotic animals in the garden and stuff. It was a very inspiring mm-hmm. place to be. But what somebody doesn't think about when they're building a greenhouse that's also a bedroom is what if there's a heat wave and somebody's staying there, which is exactly what happened to her. So she was trying to take this psychic's words into consideration. She was like, I'll make myself some tea. You know, I just got to relax a little bit more. But it was really when the heat wave struck that she was like, fuck it. I literally have to take a break because it's so hot. I can't work anymore. She said, eventually everything came together, but literally the only reason it did was because I took a day off. Isn't that weird? It was too hot to work. And then I just ended up working anyway. I was like sweating because I'm working in a greenhouse, just sweating. Yeah. She had to turn off the AC to record every single time she had an idea. And she said, the more I was relaxing, the more I was opened up to any possibilities because I wasn't sitting there and trying to force myself to play a certain type of music. And I think that's the day that she wrote the song Stay High.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the most successful song of her solo career, easily.
I want to hit on something that you said because I'm glad that this worked for her. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a wonderful thing. But if I went to a psychic, paid money, and their prediction was just be. Yeah. I want my money
back.
Hey,
it works.
Okay, yes,
she
it works.
Said
but
it
that
was
is,
the best piece of advice she'd ever gotten.
That is not a prediction.
I
didn't pay for a life coach, right? You're supposed to tell the future. That's what you're doing.
Nice. Cody, write it down. Write it down in your blog.
Just be.
Yeah.
How dare you?
It's funny.
Tell me the lottery numbers.
I did read a little bit about her connection to spirituality. I know she was religious when she was younger, but then she became more spiritual when she got older. And she was talking about in one interview how she got her aura read. And afterwards, she was like, I don't really believe in any of that. But she was like, but I do strongly believe in astrology.
Yeah.
And there was one other thing where she was like, oh, I very much take it. She was like, being a Libra, I think she said, or I could be wrong about that. that, but she was like, that encapsulates like my entire personality. I feel like it's my way to describe myself to people who don't know me.
Well, not to brag, but this year is the year of the horse in Chinese New Year. You boy's a horse.
Wow.
Everything's really coming impressive. Up gold this year. Really 1990. Impressive. Shout out.
1890?
I said 1990. I'm not 135
oh my God,
years.
You're ancient, dude. 30.
I've been around.
Like,
35.
No, I'm saying when you had your existential crisis, you've had like 100 of them by now.
Yeah, I had my existential crisis right about the time that women got the right to vote.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not my saying God. They're tied they're together. Voting all over the place, what am I even doing?
I'm not saying
here?
They're tied together, but they did happen at the same time.
Oh, you're just women get the right to vote. You're just looking in a mirror like,
what's next? Okay, oh, so my air conditioner story is different than yours. So Sean Everett engineered Jamie. Mm-hmm. And there's like a co-interview with those two, with he and Brittany Howard, where they talk about how willing they were to just kind of get weird with things. And they had a special like contact mic that picked up electromagnetic interference. And they realized that they were picking up the air conditioning unit in the studio.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, okay, but they like moved it or like they moved the mic around a little bit to try and stop, and then they found a spot where they're like, actually this sounds really cool.
Oh,
so
okay.
They recorded it on a piece of tape, like magnetic tape. They looped it, and then they were using that sound to like generate like synth sounds. They spent like half a day getting different pitch speeds and like tape speeds and all this. And they're like, actually, this doesn't work with anything. We're that.
Oh my God, my nightmare.
But they're like, this is super cool. And it could work with something, just not anything. This.
Well, it's like you should be doing, if you're going to make a whole ass album, you should be spending half a day throwing away ideas.
Yeah.
Just trying
and
them.
Checking to see if the AC unit is actually like, this is actually really cool.
Does the AC unit get a co-writing credit?
General Electric. Yes. Co-written by General Electric.
Yes. Oh my God, I would be doing that so fast.
We're doing what?
Throwing the jokes in there, Cody. Oh, come on.
I thought you were saying you would be like working for General Electric trying to get writing credits.
I'm mailing them every day.
General Electric ignition room tone.
Yes. We are billing them for this episode.
We are billing them for this.
One last thing before we hit the track list, I wanted to circle back to something we spoke about earlier really quick, which is that this album came out just before COVID.
Yeah.
So the touring schedule was really strange, and especially for somebody that had taken on so much stress for so long. And then like this album also seemed to be a pretty stressful process for her. Like there was a lot of pressure around it. Speaking of, she finished the recording about a year before it came out.
Wow.
So she finished the, like literally in September of 2018, she finished recording the album, which means she just spent a whole year like gritting her teeth and going like, ready for it to come out. Like every day.
What was the delay?
I don't know.
That's wild.
I haven't seen anything where she's spoken on it, but yeah.
And you're just waiting. Oh, man.
But she also said once the album came out, she said, I got off the road March 14th, right as the whole shutdown went into effect.
Yeah.
It was very strange. At first, I appreciated the break because I had been working very, very hard.
Yeah.
I'd been touring for like the past 10 years. So being home for this long stretch of time is new to me. I found out I really like it. I'm making a little nest and I'm doing things that people seem to do every day that they don't enjoy, like washing their own dishes and mowing the yard and taking their dog for walks. I've actually really enjoyed having some normalcy. So it ended up that like this album, which I would imagine would be really cathartic for her, the whole world hearing about who she is and embracing her for it. And then she's like, oh, and now I'm forced into a year of self-care. Yeah. Like that must be a really interesting balance, especially like trying to balance it with all of the emotions around what's going on.
It also speaks to the strength of the record that like this record had a few months to ramp up. But for 99% of albums, that event COVID kills its momentum.
Yeah.
Right. Like it absolutely stops it dead in its tracks. But this record,
I mean, you still hear about it all the time.
You hear about it all the time. It has, like I said, it's aged really well. She was able to tour with it after the world opened back up. It really does speak to the strength of the album and the music that she recorded that like you could just pick right back up even after a year of forced. Mm-hmm. What's the word I'm looking for? A quarantine.
I know, and she's always picking up new stuff. I don't even think we said that Alabama Shakes got back together and like
that's started right, releasing yeah, like a couple stuff years
last,
ago, yeah.
Last year, I think, yeah. Late last year. Let's get into the track list.
Let's do it.
And start right off with track number one, History Repeats.
It's just a sick way to open a record.
It has incredible production. It's a really interesting choice for an opener because I think it's one of the funkiest tracks on the
album.
Oh,
it's so funky.
Yeah. And like, this is not an album that I necessarily at face value think of as a super funky album, although there are lots of really funky soul parts in it.
Yeah.
But what stays with me is the emotion afterwards. So it's just an interesting way to be like, this album isn't going to be all sad. Here we go. Yes. It's going to talk about lots of things.
That's right. Spencer and I were talking about it beforehand. It's never a hard left turn whenever it bends genres. It's very fluid, but it does, man, it kind of floats in and out of all kinds of different genres, but it does so in a way kind of like what you said, where it sets the table of like, it's not going to just be Downersville. Like we're Downersville.
Yeah. She's like, if this album is supposed to represent me, it should represent all parts of myself. Like that, my happiest, most joyous self, my more serious self, my more passionate self.
It's just a cool song.
Yeah.
She was showing somebody how she made songs. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, so you kind of lay down a guitar track and then you lay down another guitar track. And this was like a tutorial for somebody else. And then she was like, actually, I'm going to add some vocals to it because this is pretty good.
Is this good?
This is actually good.
I think I'm going to start off my whole solo album with this song.
It started out as like, this is how to.
Yes.
And it's like, actually, this is pretty good. I'm going to keep this.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about the drummer on this album a couple of times, Nate Smith. And this is one of them because this is a live drum track. This is not sampled or looped. It's incredible drum track. Like, and throughout, I don't know that there are any samples or loops on this. This is largely live drums.
Well, there's at least like a speech sample.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Yeah. But like drum samples, I think they're largely live. His performance on this album is bananas.
Track number two is He Loves Me. This song, it tackles her relationship to religion and spirituality. Yeah. I thought it was really interesting, probably relatable for a lot of people, that she had said that she was raised religious, but then when her sister passed away when she was a kid, she was instantly like, no,
well,
like
God would do this
100%. She was like, it was so painful watching her pass the way that she did. I couldn't believe in a God that would do something like that. So her relationship to religion deteriorated after that. But then later in life, as she grew up, she found spirituality in a different way outside of organized religion that worked for her. And this song, she said, I just gotten a new compressor called a distressor. It's like a piece of rack gear and put in drums, guitar, bass. But every time I'd write a verse, the song would just stop and I'd be like, what am I gonna put there? What do I want to say? And eventually I decided to follow the bass line and improvise. The first thing that came out of my mouth was, I don't go to church anymore. I know he still loves me. That was it. I went on the internet to find a preacher talking about why I should go to church and wound up watching a 2-hour sermon by this guy, Terry Anderson. I love the timbre of his voice so much that I pulled out parts of the sermon and stuck them in the song.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the sample it's you awesome. Hear at
I
the
love
beginning.
That sample. Yeah. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Especially to hear like it came from a real life moment that she felt inspired to write the song.
Yeah, it's great. The way I love the production on that sample, too, because it sounds kind of, I don't know what the word is, like echoey, I guess.
Yeah, like a memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, memory is a great way. I have Georgia next. It's just this song is so sweet.
It probably gets stuck in my head most over the years.
It really it's. Yes, that hook.
Yeah.
There's an innocence that's at the heart of this song that really, really does bring up thoughts of like being a kid and wanting your crush to notice you. Not that I ever had that issue.
No. No. Very cool kids.
The old Tomcat, as they say.
Yeah. Came out of the womb wearing sunglasses.
That's me. I just want Georgia to notice me. I just want Georgia to notice. On the one hand, it does deal with, like, I say complex feelings and ideas because a narrator acknowledges that Georgia isn't into girls, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but it's not complex. Just, that's what society has deemed as like complex feelings. But
wait,
really,
what?
It's like the lyrics are like, she's a female narrator and is like, the lyrics are like, I'm not a boy, right? So it's like dealing with.
Well, she's her.
That's like, what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You said that she doesn't like women.
That Georgia.
Oh, understood.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
No, not Brittany.
Yeah, I was like, she does.
She definitely does. Yeah. No. The subject of the song, yes. Georgia, doesn't. But really, like, you set that aside and really just acknowledge it fully what it is. It's just a pure song about navigating love at a young age. It's just so beautiful.
And I don't even necessarily know that Georgia's intentions are even addressed. Like, maybe she does like women, maybe she doesn't, but it's about pining after somebody that you're not sure likes you
exactly
back. Yeah. And I feel like it's also one of her favorite songs on the album.
It's
which
so
is
good.
Really sweet.
Yeah.
I think that it's cool that it addresses her queerness in a way that makes it feel like childhood innocence, because she felt like such an outcast because of her queerness growing up in the town that she grew up in. She said, when I wrote this song, I just thought how great it would be to write a song for myself when I was that age. And I was so confused about who I was and didn't understand that love could be anything, look any kind of way. And I wanted to write a song that I could jive to at the same time. And I'd not heard a song like that. And so when it was time for me to write this record, I said, how cool would it be to write it from the perspective when I was just a child and I was needing some support, a little encouragement. I need to see something that resembled me and how I feel.
And it's such a specific choice of like want, because there's so many love songs, mm-hmm. right? There's so many songs that I wish you would love me. But saying that you just wish someone would notice you is so much more intimate and like very, I don't say childlike, but like it does, like I said, it takes you back to like trying to figure out like what am I feeling? Like it is, it's a special song.
But it's also like a combination of two concepts, right? Because it is speaking from the perspective of this child that has a childhood crush, but the name Georgia comes from a very specific Georgia, wanting to be noticed in a different way. She said, I was scrolling on my phone and I'm reading this article about the producer, Georgia Ann Muldrow. Man, I thought, I wish Georgia would notice me. Everybody she works with is dope. So I figured if she noticed me, that means I'm dope. And I was just walking around eating my sandwich and I started singing. The song isn't really about her, but it was inspired by her name for sure. You know how in movies and shit, there's always like a little boy who has a crush on his older sister's friends? That's kind of what I was going for with that song, except it's this little girl who has a crush on an older girl, so it's innocent. I never heard a song like that and I was excited to write it.
There's like, it's just whimsy. Yeah. It's just a really beautiful piece of music, mm-hmm. a beautiful song. And it's the one that whenever I listen to it, when I listen to the album over and over again, I'm like, that's a great fucking song.
And can you imagine being a child who doesn't understand their queerness and hearing a song that specifically speaks to you in that way?
Great.
That's so innocent.
Yeah.
And
Pure.
Yeah. It's just pure.
I have Stay High next.
Yup.
So this is another spot where I'm going to talk about Nate Smith, the drummer, because without his knowledge, he would just come in and they would have his drum kit mm-hmm. set up. So they built his drum kit on this track entirely out of snare drums. He came in and was like, what is this? And they were like, it's snare drums. Like, obvious. Like, I feel like that's kind of self-explanatory. Like, it's obviously snare drums. The snares were snares. The toms were snares. The kicks were snares. And then the cherry on top, they had him play the kit with chopsticks.
dude, cool. Oh, that's what, there's so many interesting sounds on this song. Speaking of childlike, there is like a childlike whimsy to the instrumentation of this song in particular. And the celesta on it, that's like a key part.
Yes.
That's played by Robert Glasper.
Who, how have we not mentioned that yet?
Yeah, I know. He's like, featured on like four of the songs.
Just a towering name.
Crazy. Yeah. Legend.
Legend. But I just love the idea of this guy coming in and being like, yeah, what is it today? It's like, okay, it's the whole kit made out of snare drum. Also, here's your chopsticks.
Yeah.
Man's being put through it.
I also saw that this was one of those songs that helped shake her out of the writer's block, where it's like everything kind of happened at once. She'd had these two guitar riffs for a while that she was working on, and she didn't really feel like they worked together, but she was trying to make them fit together. So she kept writing this music around them to connect them. And then she took the two guitar riffs out and she was like, oh shit, this is the song. The music I wrote for this other music is the actual music.
That's so good.
Yeah.
I have Tomorrow.
Do it.
So for Tomorrow, the song Tomorrow, the band had gone home before they had started tracking it. So she and Sean Everett assembled it in kind of like a piecemeal way. And they talked about like the keyboard part having its own drama around it, because it was originally played by somebody who had already left, and they were like, we need this. His last name was Horton. They're like, we need this re-recorded. And there was a guy there named Larry Goldings who was like a session player, and like, hey, can you hop on this? And he looked at it and he was like, no, this is too hard. And actually Larry Goldings was the other guy's mentor. And he's like, I can't play this. So he took it home, came back, and then played it like in an orchestral session.
Wow.
Yeah. They were like, it just kind of happened that we needed somebody in a minute. And it was, they had written a part too complicated for even this guy. And he was like, I'm going to take it home and practice.
Yeah. That's so cool though.
Yeah.
Wow. And impressive.
Very impressive.
Yeah. Track number 6 is called Short and Sweet. This is a perfect song for a cynical romantic.
Yes.
It's like a poem written about a doomed, passionate relationship. It is like, it's so beautiful in such a devastating way that I feel it's one of those songs where when I read the lyrics, I like am brought to tears a little bit.
Yeah.
It's so pretty. She said, I wrote that song when I just started dating my partner about 3 years ago. I think they're married now. Mm-hmm. She said, I thought, oh God, here we go again. This is probably not going to work out in my favor. I had these expectations like this isn't going to last very long, but it'll probably be nice. How about we just have this beginning part and we'll skip the end? It's a song full of expectations.
Yeah.
My favorite lyrics from this song where she speaks to that is she says, there are miles between us, time between us. There is something between us. I may be a fool to dream of you, but God, it feels so good to dream it all.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, and then she has another lyric where she says, just the beginning. I only want the beginning. We'll give each other all our best. Then time can do what it wants with it.
Just poetry.
It's so sad.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm chill.
You're chill.
I'm
you're
so cool. Chill. Born cool.
She's a wonderful lyricist.
Yeah.
There's so much emotion packed in that. And yeah, just, I'm just, the more that I listen to it, the more I'm impressed with her as an artist.
Yeah.
13th Century Metal is the one that I have next. Just an
It's like the showstopper
of the
whole album.
It's an unreal track.
Yeah.
It's beautifully weird. This evolved from Robert Glasper going in and doing a sound check on an orchestron, which sounds like a Doctor Who villain.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Nate Smith started jamming just a little bit while he was doing a sound check. And Brittany Howard was like, don't stop them. Like, just let them. And they recorded it. We have to do something with this. This is too good.
Yeah.
So after they got done, she and Sean Everett edited the track to like, okay, this works. We can place this here. And then she did the vocal track lyrics off of her phone in one take.
Whoa, that must have felt like a very spiritual recording session to sit in on it. It's, by the way, this is This song and the next two tracks on the album, which are Baby and Goathead, are all ones that Robert Glasper plays keyboards on. I had written, this is probably my favorite instrumental on the album. It's super experimental and chaotic and feverish. The lyrics are super heartfelt and demanding. And it's this like intense, almost just like necessary demanding of humanity to be better, but not even framed on the other person. It's framed towards herself.
That's right.
You know, the lyrics are more of a vow than anything else. It's this resolve to evolve and to hold ourselves to a higher moral and personal expectation.
The lyric poll that I have, I'm sure I'm dedicated to oppose those whose will is to divide us and who are determined to keep us in the dark ages of fear. I hear the voices of the unheard speak for those who cannot speak and shelter the minds that carry a message of peace, love, and prosperity. I repeat, we are all brothers and sisters.
We could just read the whole lyrics on this show and everybody be in tears.
It's yeah. showcase of yeah. lyricism, of determination, of defiance, of unity. You said showstopper, and you're absolutely right.
This is the, for me, like, there are obviously a lot of songs on this album, like Georgia and Stay High, that were like the big takeaways from the album. They're easy to pop on in the car. Yeah. They're easy to sing along to. They're great songs. This is the song that feels like, oh, it really took me out of the album and made me feel like, this is something that maybe even belongs, like, has a whole nother project around
this concept.
I agree
with that. Yeah, it's like an art project in and of itself.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk about Goathead.
Okay.
Because it's like probably the most important song.
It's the heaviest song on the record. Definitely the heaviest song on the record. It describes a real life story of someone cutting off a goat's head, bashing in all of her father's car windows and tossing it in, as well as the racist comments her mother would receive while taking Brittany Howard throughout town. So weirdo shit minimizes it, right? That's like, that is,
we should also mention for the context of that, she's the child of interracial parents. Her mother is white, her dad's black, so whenever her mom would take her out shopping, she'd get a lot of horrific comments from people that didn't understand their relationship to one another. And then her dad obviously is dealing with just blatant face value racism.
I mean, that's,
on a daily basis.
I hear those stories in my first two thoughts are obviously empathy toward her family, and then like how pathetic, right? Towards the perpetrator. The thing is, Brittany Howard is only 37 years old, right? So this is presumably happening well into the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a relic of a different time. How sad is your life in 1994 at any time, but like well beyond, like into the 90s, that you've got so much time to consider and orchestrate throwing a goat's head into, like, bashing out somebody's window. Get a hobby, you know, go play ping pong, do anything else with your time than that. It is pathetic, doesn't even begin to describe it.
Horrible, evil, disgusting.
And to write a song about that and to confront that and say, like, this happened, this is still happening, right? Some version of this is still happening. You know, I think that she said that she didn't even know about the goat's head thing until she was 13 or 14 years old, and it was like a glass shattering moment for her.
Her parents never told her about it until she was talking to them when she was an early teenager, and she didn't, this was an eye-opening moment for her in that the way that she was raised, she was completely blinded to the racism that her family was facing. Like, she was like, my mom is white, my dad's black, we all get along, the world is a nice place for the most part. Most of that racism is in the past. And then she was talking to her mom about it when she was a teenager, and her mom was like, no. It was not that easy. As a matter of fact, remember when this happened? Yeah. And she was like, I didn't even know that happened.
Some fucking clown cut off a goat's head and threw it in.
Oh my God.
What are we doing, man?
I don't want to distract too much from this because I do want to talk about the lyrics a little bit. It is such a heavy song. But the embarrassing part of this is that before I looked into the lyrics, I had some confusion on the story, in that, you know, Spencer and I have always had a discussion on what those little like spiky plant pods that fall on the ground are called.
Cockle burrs?
Yeah, I call them burrs, but he's always known them as goat's heads.
Oh, interesting.
So this entire time until I did the research on the song, I was like, Emily stuck a burr in her tire. His tire? That's so fucked up. And then I read that it was an actual goat's head. And I was like, oh, my God, that is so much worse. Not that it wasn't already fucking horrifying.
Oh, man.
I was like, my naive little brain was like, but they meant like a burr.
That is undeniably funny.
I know. And it's so fucked up. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's so great.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the lyrics open. It's like these beautiful poetic lyrics addressing color in nature, giving respect and admiration to her parents, like speaking about some of their experiences in the world around this. And then this tone shifts as we get to the chorus and she launches into this bold question that's addressed to anyone that uses the concept of being mixed race as an excuse to belittle or reframe someone else's lived experience. Yeah. She launches right into who slashed my dad's tires and put a goat's head in the back. I guess I wasn't supposed to know that. Too bad. I guess I'm not supposed to mind because I'm brown, not black. And then she speaks to the people that would say she isn't black just because she isn't 100% black when she says, I'm one drop of 3/5, right? I was like, that's such a good lyric. Woo. Just to blatantly be like, oh, yeah, it's nothing except it's almost everything
it's
for me.
It's visceral.
Yeah.
Right. It's visceral. And anybody with a rudimentary understanding of history knows what that, like how charged that line is and how smart that line is and how cutting that line is. And just like you, it's a song that sits heavily because it should sit heavily with you.
I love she said when she was reflecting on this incident with that like horrific harassment that her dad experienced, she said, and they were basically saying, stop this now. Right? Stop this love that you guys share. Yeah. And that was hard to hear. And it's always been in the back of my mind. It's always been there. And once I wrote this song, I had a chance to release it, you know? And I think telling my parents' story, even if it's not my story, I think it's doing them some good too, just to say that this happened. This was wrong and this is what happened. And I think other people need to hear about this.
Yeah.
She also said that it was the only song on the album that she had any hesitation around releasing because she wasn't sure how her parents would feel about it.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
But as soon as she showed it to her dad, of course, before the album came out, he absolutely loved it. Oh, yeah.
And what a gift to be able to give your folks of like, this is going to mean something far bigger than the horrific nature of the incident. This is going to mean something for people.
Little did those evil people know that what they did was going to fuel this beautiful piece of art that I want to take back from them.
Yeah. That shouldn't exist in the first place because the shit that happened shouldn't exist. Yeah. But like, you know, you make lemonade and you make this fucking incredible, like, this is an incredible song.
Yeah.
It's such a defiant, towering production. I just love it.
And also it's just so satisfying to think about like how the Rube Goldberg machine they put into motion of doing this horrific act and it hits all these pins only to create this beautiful piece that does exactly the opposite of their intention. They're like, no!
On the lighter side of things, the drum kit for this one, it was like a Foley table.
It was all snares.
No, it was a tray with a triangle, some cups, and a cowbell.
Cool.
And the kick drum was a suitcase with a kick pedal attached.
Wow. It's also kind of
let's just throw some junk around and like play it, dude.
It's really cool too, though. Speaking about her childhood, she talks so much about how poor she grew up and how much she had to improvise different things. And for that to be included on this song that takes place during such a visceral time in her childhood,
it's
really cool.
It's great. This album, Jamie, feels very tired and also bursting with energy. It's a restlessness that surmounts the exhaustion of the meteoric rise and demands of success and the weight of the social and political climate. Brittany Howard's voice and vision soar, the creativity fueling an album that genre bends with ease and comes out the other side a fully formed artistic statement. It's vulnerable, it's defiant, and it's honest, but really none of the adjectives or superlatives I could continue to use would adequately capture the heart of this record. So I'm going to re-highlight a verse that feels very necessary and appropriate today. I am dedicated to oppose those whose will is to divide us and who are determined to keep us in the dark ages of fear. I hear the voices of the unheard speak for those who cannot speak and shelter the minds that carry a message of peace, love, and prosperity. I repeat, we are all brothers and sisters. Whether you've heard it before or never heard it at all, throw on Brittany Howard's Jamie. It is incredible and incredibly relevant. I know he still loves me with
a smoking guts, loves me with. Thank you all so much again for listening. Please check out our social media channels. We post a bunch of promotional cool skits and videos and clips from the show at EarwaxPod on both Instagram and TikTok.
If you have any questions, comments, album suggestions, we're open to those. Hit us up at our email at earwaxpod@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you next time.